Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Do you know what alcohol does to families, to communities, to churches, and to nations? When you think about legalizing beverage alcohol, what is uppermost in your mind? The ready availability of a body-destroying, soul-condemning, mind-numbing drug? Or are you concerned about the ready availability of your favorite drink, the conviviality of your social partners, the so-called tax advantages? In other words, what are your priorities for the community where you live? Do the lives and souls of our young people have any bearing on the way you support or oppose strong drink? My friends, you may not approve of the strong language I have to use in discussing the evils of strong drink. You may even wish you could stop my speaking out against this great evil. But as a preacher of the gospel who loves our young people, who wants to provide a safe and clean atmosphere for all our citizens, I have no choice but to speak out against the further availability of beverage alcohol. I could wish before God Almighty not only to stop the further proliferation of strong drink, but to close every liquor store, the Jack Daniel distillery, and every wholesale and retail outlet in the United States. God being my helper, I shall not remain silent. Silence can be sinful, and is in the face of the great disasters caused by drinking alcoholic beverages. Not just whiskey and vodka, but beer and wine coolers, and all the others. Will you join me in using your influence to curtail, if not destroy, this monstrous evil in our communities throughout this nation? You may have heard Peter Jennings of ABC News report that chocolate may reduce cholesterol in the blood and thus reduce the likelihood of heart attacks. He also said that scientists have discovered that red wine taken moderately will help prevent heart attacks. When the chocolate and red wine are combined, they further reduce the risk of heart attacks. Let us concede for the moment that the scientists are correct, although by this time next year they may reach the opposite conclusion. If they are correct, does that justify the use of beverage alcohol in a person's life? Are there not other factors to consider? At about the same time Peter Jennings was reporting on the benefits of chocolate and red wine, one of the other news programs mentioned some startling facts. 80% of young women who are bearing babies drink during their pregnancies. 80%. As a result of women's drinking during their pregnancies, 7,000 babies with fetal alcohol syndrome are born each year in the United States. If you reduce your risk of a heart attack by drinking red wine, and you give your child fetal alcohol syndrome, what have you gained? Would you rather have a slightly higher risk of heart attack or have a baby with fetal alcohol syndrome? How would you ever get over handicapping your child by your consumption of beverage alcohol? Webster's Medical Desk Dictionary defines fetal alcohol syndrome as follows: a highly variable group of birth defects, including mental retardation, deficient growth, and defects of the skull, face, and brain, which tend to occur in the infants of women who consume large amounts of alcohol during pregnancy. The dictionary from which I have just read was published in 1986 by Merriam-Webster, the most scholarly of the dictionary publishers in the United States. Since 1986, medical scientists have announced that they do not know how much alcohol a woman has to drink for her baby to be afflicted with fetal alcohol syndrome. Obviously, it would take more alcohol for some women than it would for others. The disturbing fact is that nobody knows how much alcohol a woman can drink without producing a baby with fetal alcohol syndrome. That ought to be a sobering fact for women who care about the health of their babies. Dr. Robert DuPont, Jr. served as White House drug chief from 1973 to 1975. He is one of the leading authorities on alcohol and other drugs in the United States. His book, Getting Tough on Gateway Drugs, A Guide for the Family, provides the following information on the relationship between drinking and fetal alcohol syndrome. Alcohol has a profoundly toxic effect on the unborn human infant. For pregnant and nursing mothers who drink, the alcohol crosses the placenta to reach the unborn baby. Alcohol also enters the mother's breast milk. Thus, alcohol consumed by the mother reaches the infant both before and after birth. For pregnant women who consume 3 drinks of alcohol per day, there is a 10% chance that their babies will be born with fetal alcohol syndrome. The risk rises to 33% if the mother imbibes 6 drinks per day. There is no safe maternal level of alcohol intake. The risk rises as the dose increases. Effects of maternal drinking on children range from mild deficits to full-blown fetal alcohol syndrome, which is characterized by mental retardation, irritability, poor motor development, and growth deficiencies before birth and through childhood. Fetal alcohol syndrome children also have a characteristic cluster of facial abnormalities: a short upturned nose, a sunken nasal bridge, a thin upper lip, and retarded growth of the jaws. Children born to alcoholic mothers are at risk for lower birth weight, cardiac defects, and learning deficits, and on the average have lowered intelligence. In the United States, about 1 in 600 births today is a fetal alcohol syndrome infant, each one a victim of an alcohol-drinking mother. Page 111. I ask you again, would you rather have a slightly higher risk for heart attack or have a baby with fetal alcohol syndrome? USA Today, September the 19th, 1990, printed an article entitled, "A Little Alcohol Can Hurt the Fetus." A few excerpts from this article by Marilyn Elias should be enlightening. 4-year-olds whose moms had even 1 alcoholic drink a day when pregnant may have impaired motor skills, a new study suggests. The kids were tested on such skills as skipping and balance beam walking, grip strength, and ability to manipulate things with their fingers. Findings add to mounting evidence that if you're pregnant, no amount of social drinking is guaranteed safe for the fetus. The first few weeks, when key organs form, is a time of particular vulnerability for the embryo, says a doctor at the University of Washington Medical School in Seattle. There is more to the article, but I shall not take the time to read it today. I need to ask the mothers or potential mothers in my audience another question. Do you have the right to put your unborn child at risk for birth defects because of your drinking? Mothers in this country can be prosecuted for using crack cocaine when they're pregnant. Is there any valid reason why drinking mothers cannot be prosecuted for their drinking activities during pregnancy? Are they not just as guilty of causing birth defects as are the users of crack cocaine and other illegal drugs? What does alcohol do to the body of the mother, or to the father, or to the others who drink? Obviously, it is more harmful to some people than to others, although it may not be possible to know whom it will harm until the harm is irreversible. Nobody knows, for example, who will become an alcoholic. Some men drink like fish for years but never become alcoholics. Others, especially women and children, may drink very little compared to some men and become alcoholics almost overnight. The reason women and children are likely to become alcoholics quicker than men is their size. A 250-pound man can metabolize more liquor than a 110-pound woman. Almost every, if not every, bodily system is adversely affected by consumption of alcohol. One of the major arguments for the existence of God is the design so apparent in the human body. The human liver is a very complex organ which performs functions almost beyond human understanding and imagination. The liver is the organ which metabolizes alcohol. If the liver cannot handle the amount of alcohol being consumed, fat begins to accumulate in the liver. Dr. DuPont says, in about 15% of heavy drinkers, this fatty buildup leads eventually to scarring and the destruction of healthy liver cells, thus producing a small, rock-hard liver. This deterioration is called cirrhosis of the liver, a disease which is often fatal. Page 108. Cirrhosis of the liver is the sixth highest cause of death in the United States. If you think the functions of the liver are complicated, what about the human brain? There is no creation in this universe which is more complex, fascinating, and amazing than the brain. Dr. Richard Restock, a neurologist on the teaching faculty at Georgetown University School of Medicine, wrote a book in 1979 he called The Brain, The Last Frontier, An Exploration of the Human Mind in Our Future. Oddly enough, Dr. Restock believes the brain is an evolutionary development. The very idea defies science and good sense, as well as divine revelation. But there is much in Dr. Restock's book about the human brain which deserves our attention. He says, for example, the number of neurons in the human brain is almost equal to the number of stars in the Milky Way, over 15 billion. Page 6. If you will, explain either the Milky Way or the human brain by the process of organic evolution. If you could do that, you will deserve all the Nobel Prizes which will ever be given from this day to the end of the world. Dr. Restock affirms that alcohol, when taken in sufficient quantities, can result in radical distortions of consciousness. People do and say things when drunk which they cannot remember later and may even vigorously deny. Page 245. What Dr. Restock says cannot be misunderstood. When you introduce into a finely tuned, well-functioning organism some foreign substance, like alcohol and other drugs, you do great damage. You may even destroy the ability of the liver or of the brain to perform its life-giving and life-saving functions. When you drink alcoholic beverages, they go almost immediately through the bloodstream to the brain. That is one reason that driving after drinking, even moderate drinking, is so dangerous, both to the driver and those he meets on our highways. Dr. DuPont says that alcohol begins by depressing the highest brain functions first, those of the frontal lobes having to do with the individual's maintenance of values and self-awareness. With higher intakes of alcohol, the drinker's judgment, decision-making, and reaction time are all affected adversely. Page 108. Alcohol's effects on the brain cause men and women to act and to react in ways they would think barbaric if they were not drinking. I have witnessed some of the most inexcusable behavior on the part of drinkers. They use language they would never have dreamed of using if they had been sober. They accosted women and even tried to force themselves on those women. When they get sober and learn what they have done, they are mortified at their conduct, but they keep on drinking. Dear friend, do you want to put into your body that which takes away your brain? To quote Shakespeare. The inspired writers do not use the language of Shakespeare, but their words could hardly be any plainer. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has babbling? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine. Look not on the wine when it is red, when it gives his color in the cup, when it moves itself aright. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes shall behold strange women, and your heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, you shall be as he who lies down in the midst of the sea, or as he who lies upon the top of the mast. They have stricken me, you shall say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Proverbs 23:29-35. Does Solomon leave any doubt about the damage alcohol does to the brain and to other bodily functions? Large doses of alcohol depress parts of the brain functions. If the quantity of alcohol is large enough, it can depress the breathing center and cause death. You may remember how college kids at one time, although I have not heard of any lately, engaged in drinking contests. Almost invariably, some student would drink so much he would die of acute alcohol poisoning. I had a friend, as I was growing up, who drank heavily on an empty stomach and almost died. He was not accustomed to drinking at all, but was challenged to do so by his buddies. It was almost his last drink. The following brief statements about alcohol's effect on the brain from Dr. DuPont's book will have to suffice for the time. There is evidence that irreversible brain damage from heavy drinking may begin even before the onset of cirrhosis. The brain function of alcoholics who have been addicted for 20 years is often noticeably and permanently impaired. One brain-based effect of alcohol consumption is decreased ability to drive safely. Any intoxication impairs driving ability. Memory is impaired after very modest levels of drinking. Another study shows that people who drink large amounts of alcohol, say 5 or 6 drinks at a time, have mental impairments related to driving which last long after all traces of alcohol are out of their bodies. Page 109. Every one of us knows how vital a healthy heart is to our continuing to live and to enjoy life. When your heart stops and cannot be restarted, it is over in this world for you. Not all heart trouble has a direct or an indirect relationship to drinking, but a substantial amount of it does. Drinking increases the workload the heart has to perform and reduces the coronary blood flow to the heart muscle. Dr. DuPont affirms that alcohol renders the flexibility, the contractibility of the muscles forming the heart walls. Characteristically, too, alcohol can affect the strength and regularity of the heartbeats and can produce hazardous abnormalities in the heart rhythm. Page 110. Tragically, drinking can produce such attendant risks as angina or heart pain, phlebitis, and stroke, as well as other hazards to the heart and blood vessels. The truth is, when any part of the body is adversely affected by alcohol, the heart is also affected. How can we justify from any viewpoint the use of beverage alcohol? Do you honestly think you are better off physically and spiritually when you imbibe beverage alcohol? I have spent a considerable amount of our time today examining the effects of alcohol on the body and on the mind of individuals. What does drinking do to families, to communities, and to the nation? I know what it does to families because I have worked with families where someone, or more than one, was involved in drinking. I know husbands who have failed to provide for their families because drinking was more important to them than their wives and children. In some cases, a man is so devoted to drinking that he will not or cannot make a living for his family. He may even weep over his relationship to his family, but alcohol has such control over his life that he is driven to drink, regardless of his family's needs. Drinking is one of the major causes of divorce. In fact, some social scientists report that more than half of all divorces are caused by alcohol, or at least directly related to someone's drinking. Husbands and fathers are often involved in traffic accidents or industrial accidents and prevented from taking care of their families. Besides, spouses and children are often mortally embarrassed by the drinking of husbands and fathers. Is drinking so important to you that you would alienate your family and your friends by your drinking? Is beverage alcohol more important to you than your family? Most of you who know me understand how important Molly, our sons, and their families are to me. I never do a series of lessons on the home without telling everyone how vital Molly and other families are to me. Would I risk losing her love and respect and losing her for all the alcohol in the world? Absolutely not. Nor would I risk losing the friendships I have made through the years over a few drinks of booze. Drinking cannot be that important, can it? What will God say to you in the judgment if you have lost your families and your brothers and sisters in Christ because of drinking? What kind of community would we have if a substantial number of your citizens are drinkers and drunks? Is the moral atmosphere of the community better because alcohol is legal, whether by the bottle or by the package or by the drink? Years ago, I encountered a group in West Tennessee which called itself Citizens for a Better Community. The organization existed only, at least as far as I could tell, to promote the sale of a drug, beverage alcohol. They succeeded in legalizing liquor by the drink. Because the churches and other responsible organizations sat on their hands and did nothing, or very little, to prevent the further spread of this death-promoting drug. And do not pretend alcohol is not a drug. Medical scientists identify alcohol as a narcotic and as being highly addictive. If we fight marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and other dangerous drugs, why not fight beverage alcohol? It is the biggest drug problem in the United States, except nicotine. Alcohol may kill as many as 200,000 Americans every year. That number is far greater than the number of people who are killed by the other so-called hard drugs, crack cocaine, heroin, LSD, TCP, and others. And yet, we want to legalize alcohol in every jurisdiction in our nation. Are we morally schizophrenic, as the late Dr. Francis Schaeffer used to say? I do not know how you would reach any other conclusion. The United States is experiencing a crime wave which would have been unimaginable 40 years ago. I know there were crimes back then. There always have been criminal activities in every nation on earth. But who would have thought we would have so much child abuse, spouse abuse, robbery, murder, killing of fathers, of mothers, of grandparents, and other family members? I know alcohol and other drugs are not implicated in all these vicious crimes, but it has a direct bearing on thousands and thousands of crimes. You know that if your eyes are not blinded by drinking. It does not help any for the drunk who has killed someone, either with an automobile or with a gun, to say, "But I did not mean to hurt anyone. I was drinking." And then for a lawyer to attempt to exonerate such criminal behavior is as bad as the drinker who kills because of his drinking. Every person deserves an attorney. But no attorney with any moral values will work to free a man who has killed someone because of his drinking. Driving under the influence of alcohol does not amount to a reasonable defense. It is a disgrace to our legal system and to our sense of justice for lawyers and judges to conspire to let drinking murderers go free. Every time I hear of a drunk killing someone, I think of the beautiful young pregnant lawyer in Nashville who was pinned against a telephone pole or a light pole by a drunk driver. That man will be out of prison in a very short time. She is gone permanently. Where is the justice of our legal system? Oddly enough, Dr. R. Kirby Godsey, controversial president of Mercer University at Macon, Georgia, says the Bible seems to waffle a little on alcohol. Dr. Godsey's new book, When We Talk About God, Let's Be Honest, has stirred a great amount of conflict in the religious world. Can you understand why, from this brief excerpt from his book, does the Bible really waffle a little on alcohol? Please decide on the basis of what I have already read to you, Proverbs 23:29-35, and on the basis of this verse. Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging. And whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Proverbs 20:1. Does that sound like waffling to you? Drinking alcoholic beverages is never wise, anywhere, at any time, with anybody, for any reason. It is among the most foolish and inexcusable behaviors known to men. Will you please use your influence to stop the further spread of alcohol? Do you honestly believe God will be well pleased with you if you do not? Thank you for listening, and may God richly bless you.